Apoptosis going mad, my liver's gonna fail. Maybe it's from the radium I use to paint my nails. Well, say you hate me, carbon date me, throw me in the sea. I'll be back with time because I'm made of stardust and chemistry. Of stardust and chemistry.
Hello, and welcome to Cowboy Chemistry, where we talk about the wilder days of chemistry. My name is Dylan Gardner. My pronouns are they, them, and I'm a PhD candidate at Texas Tech. My guest today is Kelsey Snipes, a beer expert. I don't know if there's a better term, beer expert.
Yes. So technically not a Cicerone yet. I'm studying for my certified Cicerone. But I do have my level one certification, which is a certified beer server. So I just say CBS until I actually take the exam.
Okay. What is part of the exam? Like how involved is it? Like what kind of stuff do you have to know?
It's a lot. So they actually have like a written portion where they're asking history about certain beers, where they came from. So there's a little bit of geography, a lot of history, and then even a lot of physics as far as like building a draft system, like what type of beer lines are you running, what material is it made of, what's the inner diameter and outer diameter of that, and how many feet of it are you running.
Dang.
it gets really involved. So and then a lot of chemistry naturally, which is exciting for me. I'm a big science nerd, so I love learning the chemistry and a little bit of biology in there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a biochem system in my, you know, like, yeah. I've always thought about like yeast as little pets. I don't know if that's like weird,
but
like
I'm
more of a baker, so I like to like I really want to start my own sourdough starter.
Yes.
And you like literally basically keep them as little pets and like feed them every week.
Feed them, yeah. Here's some water, some flour, have fun.
Then you have to like throw half of them away.
Yeah.
So, but I always ask my guests like how much chemistry do you know? So,
ironically, even though I was a bio major and a minor in chemistry, it was very minimal, basic kind of stuff. Because I took all my bio classes first before I knocked out the chemistry part.
Mm-hmm.
And in high school, instead of taking an actual chemistry class, we had another class that was called Integrated Physics and Chemistry.
Okay.
So it wasn't as in-depth as it probably should have been, and that probably would have helped me out a lot more if I had taken an actual chemistry course, but very, very minimal, I would say.
Unless it has to do with beer, right?
Yeah, unless it has to do with beer. I'm all over that.
All right. Well, I wrote a little introduction about, like, beer for the listeners and, like, why we're talking about it. Because I am the layman, I, like, Googled all of this. So, like, if any of it's wrong, you're the expert. You got to tell me. beer being one of the oldest and most widely consumed drinks in the world, it's apparently the third most popular drink overall after water and tea. It's one of the, like, the earliest archaeological evidence for fermentation consists of about 13,000-year-old residue of, like, beer gruel, like, in some old pot that they found.
Yeah.
And they found, they date it to a group called the Natufians, who were, like, semi-nomadic, in a cave in Haifa in Israel. The cave is called, Rakafet Cave in the Carmel Mountains, which Carmel Mountains is a great name.
Sounds delicious.
Yes. Some of humanity's earliest known writings refer to the production and distribution of beer. So the Code of Hammurabi included laws about regulating beer and beer parlors for Babylon. And then there was a hymn called the Hymn of Ninkasi.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a prayer to a Mesopotamian goddess of beer. And I guess, like, it was both a prayer to the goddess and also, like, a way of remembering the recipe for beer, which I was like, that's really... So, the earliest archaeological evidence of fermentation consists of a 13,000-year-old residue of a beer that was, like, gruel at the bottom of a pot that is supposedly used by these semi-nomadic Nadhufins for ritual feasting. And they were found in a cave in the Carmel Mountains in Haifa in Israel. Near Haifa. Haifa is a city in Israel. Some of humanity's earliest known writings referred to production and distribution of beer. The Code of Hammurabi included laws regulating beer and beer parlors for Babylon. And the hymn to Ninkasi was both a prayer to the Mesopotamian goddess of beer and a method of remembering the recipe for beer because, like, not a lot of people could read. Mm-hmm. So beer is recorded in written histories of ancient Iraq, ancient Egypt. Archaeologists speculate that beer in general was instrumental in the formation of civilization. Approximately 5,000 years ago, workers in a city of Uruk, which is in modern-day Iraq, were actually paid in beer. Like, they were paid in liters of beer. And even in ancient Egypt, when they were building the Great Pyramids, each worker got a daily ration of 4 to 5 liters of beer, which served as both nutrition and refreshment. And it was crucial to the pyramid's construction. And so fermented beverages were made all around the world from different sources. And so there's, like, a large variety of drinks that we now would classify into, like, liquor, beer, and wine. And so my first question to you then is, how do we define beer?
Technically, I guess, since hops really wasn't really used until, I think, like, the 8th century. It's any kind of fermented cereal or grain-based beverage. Whenever you were saying that the first archaeological find of, quote-unquote, beer was gruel, what they traditionally called it, I guess, I don't know in the correct language, but everything I've read, it's called gruit, G-R-U-I-T. Mm-hmm. And instead of using hops, they use, like, different botanicals and spices and stuff to kind of mellow the flavor. But it was still, like, a grain-based fermented beverage that they refer to as ale. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when we're talking about brewing beer, you know, everyone, you know, you brew beer. Mm-hmm. What are, the general steps?
Well, you're gonna take some barley, typically, is going to be the vast majority of what they call your grain bill. They are kilned at different levels. I don't know how technical I want to, or how far back I want to get into the brewing process, but this malt gets steeped, I guess, so that all of the starches inside of the grain kind of almost not really crystallize, but they soften up so that whenever they kiln it, which, you know, like, just toast it at different levels to get the desired flavor. Once you boil it crush it and then boil it, you're getting all of the starches and all the sugar that's available inside of that. And those husks that are still on the outside that you just crushed will filter out as you drain that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a filter bed as well. And once you get all of that sugar water, that's called wort, then at that point you can start adding all your other fun stuff. Like, you can add, I wouldn't add hops at that point, but some do. It depends on the style. Mm-hmm. You start pitching your yeast, which is really what is the predominant thing that, like, creates all the crazy flavors of beer. So that's going to create all the alcohol and the carbon dioxide that you get, or the carbonation. Then you just, once you get that all done, there's a lot of, like, different vessels you have to move it from. So you have to, like, separate all of that, like, wet grain. And then you're adding that yeast and you're adding your hops. You've got to monitor, like, temperatures so that the yeast is viable. It doesn't die off and it's not... Mm-hmm. too cold that it's not doing anything.
Right.
So let that ferment for, depending on the style, could be from a few days to a few months. And once you reach your carbonation level and all that fun stuff, there's different measurements you can take to test it, see if it's ready, and then it's ready to keg or package and imbibe.
All right. if I understood that right, one of the first steps is then like malting. Mm-hmm. So when you say malting, can you explain that a little bit more of like exactly what the purpose of that is and like what it looks like?
Let's see. There's two different types of grain, or types of barley rather, that people use. There's like 2-row and then there's 6-row. And that just means like how many actual rows of those barley seed grains are on the one stalk.
Okay.
So naturally mm-hmm. the two row is going to be a bigger size. So you're going to be able to get more sugar out of that than you are like a 6-row, because naturally there's less room for those grains to grow on that one stalk. So the potential, I'm going to kind of nerd out and get some technical vocabulary here. The potential that a grain has to create sugars is called diastatic power. So the more diastatic power a grain has, the more sugar you're going to have to yield from said grain. So really, brewers really don't have to worry about the malting process. Really, they're just kind of like, there's a malt house, like someone else is like growing this barley, mm-hmm. is steeping this barley. They're letting it kind of sprout a little bit. And then
right.
because that kind of breaks the hulls on that barley. And then after that, they're kilning it. And I actually got a few of my little grains here, if you want to take a look at those. They're just different levels of kilning. So you can see I have it in order from like light to dark.
Oh, yeah.
So naturally, the longer you kiln it, the darker you're going to get. But the less sugar you're going to yield out of that. So the ones at the bottom that are like the roasted barley that just look like coffee beans.
Yeah.
You're going to get a lot of color. You're going to get a lot of roast flavor out of those.
Mm-hmm.
And but less sugar. So when I talk about a grain bill, you're probably going to have to use a lot of like Pilsner malt because you need that sugar, but you're wanting the color to be darker. You're wanting to get those roastier flavors. So there's like a weird, you've got to figure out your proportions of what grain you're wanting to create what flavors.
Right.
So that's what those look like. And so you got your maltsters taking care of all that stuff. Really, once it gets to the brewery, all they have to worry about is figuring out the proportions of what grain they're going to use for the style they're making, and then crushing it, and then just boiling it and getting all that good sugar water out of it.
Okay.
So that's really just the malting part of it.
So there's like an entirely separate kind of industry just for malting.
There is, yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that. Because to me, like, you go to a local brewery, you think they do kind of all the steps.
Everything's in-house,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and like certain grains are only available in certain areas too, depending on what styles you're making. So like I've seen breweries, like even here in town, that get their barley imported from Germany and from mm-hmm. Munich to recreate like a more traditional German style beer.
Right. Yeah.
But there are some really awesome malt houses here in Texas. Like I think the one that gets used the most that I've heard of is Maverick.
Okay.
Maltsters. I can't remember what city it is, but it is here in Texas, and they've got some good stuff too. So.
I imagine like shipping the malt from Germany is probably expensive though, right? Does that how expensive does it get?
That I'm not sure, because it depends on like how much you're brewing too. But
sure.
So it's actually cheaper to do like all grain brewing as far as like the cost of the raw materials, because that's what you're starting out with.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're doing say like extract brewing, it's already been processed and you're just getting the syrup. You're getting that concentrated wort pretty much. So there's a lot more time and effort that goes into creating the extract and then packaging it and shipping it than there is just cutting the grains, letting them germinate a little bit, and then kilning them and shipping them.
Right, right. Because kilning them and shipping them, you would get like seeds, like you would like you buy mm-hmm. a coffee, right?
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
versus like a bottle of the extract, the liquid,
exactly.
right? It's a liquid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'd imagine that's a lot heavier to ship and
yeah.
all the other sides to that.
Yeah, it would get, the cost would be ungodly, I'm sure.
All right. And so I guess there's different, I guess that explains the difference between what a malt extract is and a whole grain barley or other grains, or is that a mm-hmm. different question?
There are other grains that you can use. Barley is just the predominantly used grain for it. Like the other other breweries use rice, which I know no one out there in listening land can see, but I do have a puffed rice Chinese pale ale here, and then I have a dark lager that we can taste here in a moment. So a lot of American light lagers, those like Bud Light, Ultra, Coors Light and stuff, they use rice to get like a lighter flavor, less carbs really. And
is that why it's generally sweeter?
It can be a little bit. Rice doesn't really lend much to the flavor. It just gives it like a thinner body, and it's a cheaper grain, so
right.
It's a product that they can turn out quickly.
I had no idea that those were made of rice, because I was like preparing for this episode and I was like, oh, it's all gonna be like barley, but like, and then I was like, oh yeah, because like to me rice is sake.
Right, yeah.
Right, like, if I think of a rice-based drink, I think of sake. So you're telling me American beer is made of rice?
It does have cheap a lot American of rice in beer. It. Yeah, cheap American beer has rice in it. But, like, other beers, like, have wheat in it. There's some that are made with rye. There's some that's made with oats, some with sorghum. There's different, you can, as long as you can extract the sugar out of whatever grain.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have to use more or less or mix different percentages of whatever, but... Yeah, it's just a grain-based beverage.
You blew my mind there. I was not expecting it to be rice-based.
Well, speaking of rice, do you want me to pop open this rice beer? You want to give it a little sip? Just
sure, we can try
for
it.
For science.
Yeah. I have more questions later about how flavors work, but we can try the rice beer now. I want to try it.
Ooh, this one's ASMR. Got a really cool, like, pull tab on it.
Nice.
That was satisfying.
All right. And Kelsey has been very nice to give me a very small glass because she knows I don't like beer.
I know you're not a fan of beer, but
I will try it for science and for the podcast.
It is.
Maybe it'll taste like sake.
That would be cool.
I do like sake, and honestly, I like sours. I like sour beers, and we're going to talk about that later.
Yes. I do have a sour, but I was like, I don't know if I want to bring it out or if they're going to feel it. I don't know.
We might do that one instead of this darker one.
Yeah,
because I do like sour.
The darker one will be very aggressive, I feel.
I don't know. I haven't had this particular one, so. Oh, it smells amazing. Okay, so
that's not bad.
It's a pale ale, so it actually has a little bit more hops to it. So if you smell it, you can get a little bit of like floral, citrusy kind of smell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's kind of a slightly hazy, like you can still see through it, but it's a really pretty like gold color.
Yeah, very pretty cold. Yeah, like you said, it's just like a little turbid, but like it's still pretty, you can like still see your hand through it.
God dang, that's good. Yeah, so you get like a lot of, I'd say like lemon and orange in that one from the hops predominantly. This one, I mean, in the name it says puffed rice, pale ale. So, that the way it finishes, it just kind of like, it's almost like water. It's really thin, has that thin body because of the rice.
Right.
And that hops, whatever hops they use, it didn't have, it's not super harsh. It's not a lingering bitterness. It's just kind of like clean and bright. But yeah, this one's really good. I'm going to be getting this one again.
Yeah, because like, the hops is what gives beer its more of its bitter flavors. Like if you, because I know you can like, depending on how long you do things with the hops, you can have better language on explaining how it works. But yeah. I know like if you do it too much, you get more bitter beer or like more hops or explain how that works.
All of that. So whenever you're adding your hops to your, it depends on the species of hops. Different hops have different levels of what's called alpha acids. And that is what lends the flavor and bitterness and aroma to beers. So like if you're getting a West Coast style IPA, those are very well known for being very harshly bitter, what they call piney or resiny.
Okay.
Which I'm picky about my IPAs. I'll try any beer, but I know that West Coasts usually aren't my deal just because I don't like that lingering bitterness. because it to me, no offense to anyone who loves these, but to me it seems like you're drinking Pine Sol, and that's not my favorite thing. It's just like that, it sticks around on your palate, those alpha acids and the lupulin, which is the yellow waxy stuff that's like in hops, kind of creates an oil, and it just lingers. It just stays on your palate forever.
Yeah, it looks like so I'm Googling the structure, because of course you said alpha acid, and I was like, okay, what is this chemically?
Yes. It's they've got like alpha acids and beta acids are the primary ones, but there's other acids in there that don't lend as much as far as like flavor and aroma. But yeah, go on.
So what would be an example of like a West Coast IPA?
Say the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. That one's probably like one of the first ones and probably the best known West Coast style IPA on the market still. And it's been in production for like decades, I couldn't tell you. But they're like ISO... I can't remember the term now.
ISO... Humulons?
Yes.
Is that what you're looking
for? Humulons, yes.
I'm reading all about it because I Googled it. I'm like, ooh, looks.
Oh, yeah. No, like whenever I started learning more like in depth about like fermentation as far as like how beer gets its alcohol and its carbonation, I went down a rabbit hole and I was like, this is awesome. Like all the undergoing like glycolysis and the whole, like I have a chart here from like... what happens whenever you do pitch your yeast into your wort. And yeah, I mean, we can get to that when we get to it.
So let's get into like fermentation, how fermentation works in general. Obviously you need yeast.
Yes.
And then I know temperature can affect a lot of things in terms of how what kind of beer you end up with. And, and I know there's different species of yeast that you can use. So yes. What are the things that you consider?
Depending on whatever type of beer you're going for, decides what kind of yeast you're using. There are two particular style species, I guess. I don't know how to go about that, but yeah, there's ale yeast and then there's lager yeast. So any beer is either one of the two. And the difference is lager yeast ferments at cooler temperatures and it ferments from the bottom. So that one is Saccharomyces pasteurinus, and that one is your lager yeast. So ale yeast is actually going to ferment at warmer temperatures, and it's going to ferment from the top. So you're going to see like more of the bubbles and stuff from the top, whereas lager's at the bottom. And that is Saccharomyces cerevisiae. So there's got two different types or styles.
Cool, but, and you're like remembering that off your head? Like I can never remember those scientific names.
I'm weird like that, and I've studied it for years, so it's kind of... ingrained at this point.
Ingrained, haha. That's a pun.
Pun intended.
But no, that's super impressive. I'd never remember stuff like that. Which, you know, and then I can throw out random chemical names. So you know, it's the same thing. But yeah. Like, you're just more into the.
Once you get into it, yeah, you understand it a little bit more. So like, let's say, ale yeasts are more interesting to me because they produce more esters and phenols whenever they undergo fermentation. So esters are going to be more of the fruity flavors and aromas that you're getting out of beer. Phenols are going to be more of the spicy, cinnamony, clove-like, anise kind of flavors.
Yeah, because... esters, like you said, is fruity. And then phenols is actually a lot of that comes into, like, the smell and the flavors of, like... like barbecue and smoke, like smoke when you smoke things, that flavor, that smell, that's phenols.
Yes, which is really crazy. Like as I was kind of starting to study all this, whenever yeast, what is the word, autolyzes, pronunciation, basically whenever it dies off, it gives off that like meaty, smoky, barbecue-y kind of flavor. And I found out that like a lot of like barbecue chips like use like dead yeast pretty much to create that flavor. Yeah. It blew my mind.
That's wild.
Yeah. It's crazy.
There's rice and beer and barbecue chips are dead yeast.
There you go. Yep.
That's amazing. Yeah, learning new things in this pod. I was not expecting to learn that. Yeah. We're talking about beer.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, and like fermentation is just so cool. And like I really would love to study more like fermentation science and like understand more in depth like the science and the actual like chemical processes behind everything, because just studying just a little bit that I know of fermentation and like how yeast creates the alcohol and carbon dioxide in beer has just been like blowing my mind lately. I'm like, I know what those things are.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just like obviously you've got like all that glucose in your wort, or maltose rather. Mm-hmm. Yeast is gonna eat that. That's gonna create energy. So you got your ATP and then you got pyruvate. That's going to
Selena's just shaking her head like, yeah, sure. It's making all these things.
Geeking out.
I believe you.
I just want to drink it. But yeah, so like the byproducts are going to be those esters and phenols, which pyruvate is an ester, I believe. And so that's going to create your ethanol and, oh no, I'm lighting, acetaldehyde, but that ends up turning into ethanol as well as your carbon dioxide. So science.
Selena just gave a thumbs up. That's yeah. Just like, yeah, sure.
Totally. I can draw a chart. That's fine.
So you said all beer is either an ale or a lager. And I didn't realize that because I saw, you know, I Googled a little bit just to know enough to ask questions. And so, you know, I asked, is there an ale and a lager? And I added, and other types of beer, because I didn't think there, but it's literally only ales and lagers?
Pretty much, yeah. Like,
well, what is a stout then?
Stout is, I mean, it depends. Really, it just depends on what kind of yeast is used. I would say a stout is probably predominantly, you're probably going to find more ales on the market than you are technically lagers. So like, let's see here. Okay. Like a Scheinerbach, that's a lager. Pilsners, lagers.
So okay, what's a Kurz Light?
Kurz Light, and that is garbage. No. it is.
Some Kurz Light fan is going to just one star review this podcast star. Now.
That's fine. I stand by Ron White on how he feels about Kurz Light. I think the mountains should turn brown, not blue. But I give people a hard time. Like, if you find a beer you like, that's awesome. But if you're willing to, like, help, like, let me help you find something, like, different, I promise there's something out there. But, yeah, lagers are just, they don't produce those esters or phenols. So they're lighter in body and flavor. They have a crisper, cleaner finish, which makes them more palatable to like the general public, I guess, or mm-hmm. population.
So that's generally, that's going to be like your Budweiser's, your Coors, your Michelob's, your Miller's.
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The ones that have no flavor.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah. You can find others that do have flavor, like, so like the first Pilsner's.
To be fair, Budweiser does have a flavor, but it just tastes like domestic violence, so.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not. You know,
that's
not
a dark joke. Flavor.
That's a dark joke. Why you keep going and coming with the dark jokes know. Recently?
That's just where she lives, in the darkness.
That's actually it's a Stephen Feldman joke.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so lagers, yeah, they're just going to be more approachable, I guess. But Pilsners, and whether it's like a Czech style Pilsner or a German style, they're gonna have a little bit more hops added to it, so you kind of get more of, but it's like a German Czech type of hop, so it's gonna be more citrusy, kind of herbal, grassy maybe. Mm-hmm. It's not gonna be like the harsh bitter American style mm-hmm. hops, because I mean, you look at any actual like German or British or Irish or Czech style beer, Belgian beer, and compared to an American style, it's like the hops is going to be so harsh in America. Like, we love our hops here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why I don't like a lot of beer, is because a lot of beer here is American beer, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'm a fan of hops.
Yeah, it's
as a flavor most of the time.
It can be a lot. I love the way they smell. I do. They smell amazing. It's mm-hmm. just sometimes it's like I'm sucking on a pine cone. It's not my favorite.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about like what happens when the flavors are off. So like we've talked about how you get good flavors. Mm-hmm. But like, so what can lead, you know, there's a term skunky beer. What leads to a skunky beer?
Oh, now here we go. We're going to talk about isohumulones again. So isohumulones again are a byproduct of hops or alpha acids in hops. Mm-hmm. And so what causes skunking in beer is also called lightstruck. It's a chemical called MBT. I have it written down because I don't remember the actual like chemical name for it. There's a lot of syllables somewhere. It's like 3-methyl-2-butyl something and 1-thiol. I can't remember, but it's MBT. So whenever light reacts with that isohumulone, what's created is this chemical reaction that creates that MBT chemical, which is the same like aroma as the skunk spray. So whenever you get like a Corona mm-hmm. or like really anything in a clear bottle, once you leave it out in the light within like a few minutes, you're going to start to smell that off flavor, that light struck skunkiness. It's not as easily found in anything in a green bottle, but if you have anything in like a can or a brown bottle, there's mm-hmm. less likely to be that skunking because that UV light is filtered through that bottle, that glass.
Right, yeah, because we do that same thing in chemistry labs is we have a few of that brown colored glass so that mm-hmm. if our reactions are light sensitive, it keeps them from... You know, obviously, it's not going to skunk because that's a different thing.
Yeah, right.
You're not going to get a skunk smell necessarily. But, like, yeah, I've had to use them occasionally because I have these chemicals that are not light stable. So I make them, and then if I don't cover them up, they'll disappear. Like, they decompose, essentially, and, like, react with themselves.
Oh, that's crazy.
So, yeah, that's why beer's always in, like, brown bottles usually or cans.
Typically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like... Okay, so maybe I didn't quite catch this. Can Coronas be in clear bottles? Or do they just, if you leave them, they will get skunky?
They will, yeah.
They put it in clear bottles, I think, just for pure aesthetic purposes.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what a lot of beers do. Because, like, you want to be able to see that gold, clear liquid inside.
It's just silly because they also always advertise this beer as something that you can drink on the beach. And you absolutely should not drink that on the beach.
which is why the people put lime in it to kind of, like, that acid kind of, like, counteracts that, like, awful smell. But some breweries have actually genetically altered hops so they don't end up making that isohumulone that reacts with...
There's GMO in beer?
There's GMO beers, yeah. So I think Miller was the first one to use that particular kind of, or like maybe Mate created it, I don't remember, that kind of hops, because I think Miller High Life is in a clear bottle, but you can leave that in the sun and it's not going to skunk.
Mm-hmm. Genetic modification.
Yeah.
People think it's like, a lot of people don't like that, genetically modifying things, mm-hmm. which, like, I don't know. I feel conflicted on it.
In certain instances, it's helpful, sometimes not so much.
Yeah, I feel like it can be helpful, it can do good things, but then I'm like, part of me is like, is it really ethical to do that, though? Because we're messing with genetics, and that just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Because, like, if we did it in people, it would definitely not be right, right? Like, if we were messing mm-hmm. with human DNA, people would be like,
that's not cool.
But because we're taking, like, jellyfish DNA and putting it in tomatoes, that's fine. And I'm like, that still seems wrong, though. Yeah. I don't know, like.
You're playing God.
Yeah.
It's questionable.
And then there's all the, of course, all the economic parts of it is definitely unethical, right? Like, the ability to patent DNA seems like a dangerous idea to me. That's the part that I really don't like. And, like, farmers getting sued. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a mess.
When I was in high school and I was vegan, I was, like, very, what's that company called? There's like one company that everyone is mad at all the time, and I forget what
Monsanto?
It's called.
Monsanto?
Monsanto. Was like, I hate Monsanto.
Yeah.
I still don't like them.
But they're everywhere. Yeah.
I still don't like them, but yeah, because they like, again, sue farmers into the ground for DNA that like pollinators are spreading.
Yeah, you like, can't control the bees.
The bees, the birds. How am I supposed to stop that? The wind, you know.
It's not my fault. Yeah. Sounds like a you problem, Monsanto.
Yeah. Okay. So some beers apparently make a really big deal about where they get their water from.
Mm-hmm.
Does water have like a big effect on the beer? What is it about locations of waters that make a difference?
It really does. So I just recently studied all my German styles, so that's really predominantly what I'm going to be talking about as an example. So let's say Pilsen, Germany, their water was very soft, didn't have very many minerals in it. So they were able to grow a grain that was actually really light. And whenever they created a beer with their water that they had available to them, they could put some hops in there to kind of balance out the sweetness from the malt they were using, and came out with a very pale lager called Pilsner. And in Germany, let's say, which part? The further south, we'll go to Munich. So Munich, their water source was very hard water, had a lot of minerals in it. They tried to recreate Pilsners, but they couldn't. I mean, even with the water they had available to them, they couldn't even grow their barley to be as pale as Pilsner. So in Munich, you're going to get a lot more amber and darker styles than you are in Pilsner because of the water that they had available to them. Because they didn't really understand, like, the water chemistry and, like, how you could change that to create whatever style you really want.
Right. So it's not even just the water that you use to brew it. It's the water that you water the plants with that even makes a difference?
It can. I mean, just back that far back then, it was. But now, I mean, you can grow any of the grain you want anywhere and create whatever. But still today, like, if the whatever water you're brewing with does make a difference because of the calcium carbonate predominantly. Let me see. So I've got my notes here. Because if you have a water that is really hard, it has all that calcium carbonate in it, the hops are going to react with that, and it's going to be like super harsh and bitter, and it's just not a desirable flavor at all. But you can add some acid to that to balance it out. And I think actually some acid changes the pH, so it actually just precipitates out completely.
Yeah.
And then you can, and it kind of balances the harshness depending on what style of beer. So, like, if you're doing like a porter or stout, something really dark, that acid kind of balances out that sweetness. So, yeah, it's a lot more chemistry. You get to balance out all the pH and reactions with how sweet or how harsh that bitterness is that you're adding to your wort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so if you take calcium carbonate and you add acid to it, actually you might get depending on what acid you get, you might get a precipitate that's calcium and then the anion to the to the acid. So if you pick your acid right, then that would be what precipitates out, and the carbonate will bubble out as CO2.
Mm-hmm.
So so that's probably what, if you're going to do that, that's probably what would happen if you added acid. So that's probably what they do. And then they precipitate out calcium, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. Never thought about that. We have really hard water in Lubbock.
We do, yeah. Like any brewer that I've talked to, and they're like, no, we're not going to. Like, aside from Mickey at Plains Brewing, he has well water. So it's still different than what the city gets. But yeah, no one's like, we're not using Lubbock water. Everything would just taste like garbage. It'd be so harsh and just so bitter.
Yeah.
So you don't want distilled water because that just has absolutely nothing in it. You do want some minerals in there, and you can kind of add your own, like, you can add gypsum to like soften the water to where you want it and kind of mimic the water of certain, I guess, cities. Like, I know there's a British style That was made in England, Burton-on-Trent, mm-hmm. and that has a really soft water. Today, we've, like, broken down, like, the chemistry of, like, the water in all these, like, big cities that created these different styles, and so you can mimic anything now. But, yeah, it's softer water, minimal minerals, probably the best thing that you could use. I think reverse osmosis water might be predominantly what people use. I don't know, purified to some extent.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think we have RO water at work, too, which is how we get water to do reactions with, right? Mm-hmm. And the only problem with that is you have to make, like, for us, like, sometimes we want basically distilled water, but not really distilled, but just, like, we want neutral pH water,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah.
For what we do. And so... we actually have to test it because the RO doesn't always make it neutral because it does leave some of those minerals, right? Mm-hmm. So that's interesting to, yeah, that people use RO water for beer too.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I use that at work.
Yeah.
But yeah, in some cases we don't even want to use the RO water because like it will, because it's, that it doesn't have ions in it, doesn't have, minerals in it, mm-hmm. It'll actually eat the metal finish on some of our equipment. So we have to use the Lubbock water. And then we add a little bit of just vinegar, acetic acid, into it to keep it from forming mineral deposits on the sides.
Oh, crazy.
Hmm. Yeah, because we can't use distilled water. It'll, like, we have these little hot baths. Mm-hmm. You also add a little bit of vinegar to keep mold or like, algae from growing in it. Or you can put soap in there. Hmm. That helps, too. So.
Yeah. Oh, like, a big thing that you definitely don't want in your beer water, like, ever, chlorine. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Chlorine's bad.
I can only imagine. It's going to taste like a pool.
bad things. It's just gross.
Yeah. I don't think we usually use chlorine in anything because it's harsh.
It is. It's so harsh.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we use chlorates for bleach, like if we need to bleach something, but that's about it, you know, like to kill bacteria or whatever. Like for biochem people, they'll sometimes use bleach. Actually, most of the time they use 70% ethanol as their decontaminant, because like, fun fact, 70% ethanol is more effective at killing bacteria than 90% ethanol. So if you are trying to disinfect something at home and you want to use alcohol, you should use 70% ethanol. Like, that's what scientists use. That's what people in hospitals will use it to.
The more you know.
Hospitals will also use bleach because bleach just kills a lot more, you know?
Right, yeah.
But if you're just trying to do a base disinfect, 70% ethanol works great.
Okay. Good to know.
I don't know. I don't remember why.
It also depends on, like, what you're applying it to. If you're doing it on somebody's skin, you don't necessarily want to use bleach.
Right, yeah, that's true.
You could use alcohol, but most of the time they just use sterile water.
Yeah.
To, like, clean out wounds and stuff if it's going to come into contact with skin. But
yeah, because if you use straight-up bleach or alcohol or hydrogen peroxide, it's killing your cells along with the bacteria you're trying to kill.
Right.
Not super useful. Leads to bad wound healing, usually.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to talk about my favorite kind of beer, sours. So how... I know brewers use bacteria to make sours, but, like, what bacteria? How does that work? I'm happy to drink a sour. I would be happy for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think I would rather that than a dark beer, but I will also try the dark beer.
You can definitely do that. Okay. Yeah. We ready to pop this one open?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll be quiet this time so people can actually hear the can open.
So this is Prairie Artisan Ale's Watermelon Girlfriend. It's a sour ale with watermelon, sea salt, orange, lemon, and lime. And they always have some really cool artwork on the can, too. So. Oh, so satisfying.
That was beautiful.
Pour yours.
Thank you. That's what we need to play at the start of the episode. Yeah, just that sound. Thank you.
I love that color. So you can kind of see that it's got like a little bit of a...
Oh yeah, this one's much more turbid, much more cloudy.
Yeah. Oh, that smells amazing. It smells like candy.
Mm-hmm.
Like a watermelon Jolly Rancher.
It definitely has like a Jolly Rancher, like a slightly sour candy flavor.
Oh, it's not as tart as I was expecting it to be. You definitely get that, like, cleaner watermelon flavor and, like, less of the, like, artificial, like, candy cloyingness. I don't know. I'm into that.
It's a good sound.
It's like Pop Rocks.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is, just tastes like straight up watermelon, like a watermelon drink. That's mm-hmm. good.
But yeah, so sours. I love sours. That's kind of got discovered on accident because it was generally considered an off flavor for a beer to be sour.
Right.
Usually it's lactobacillus that's added to your wort. And it reacts alongside your yeast to create that lactic acid and mm-hmm. gives you that sourness. I know, like, the Berliner Weiss and Goza styles use lactobacillus to sour those. It's going to be very well attenuated, which means, like, it's going to have a lot of sugar in it, and whenever the yeast actually kind of, like, finally eats all that sugar, it's going to be drier and crisper. Yeah, I love sours too. but yeah, there's...
So attenuation means that it has more sugar in it?
Attenuation is the ability the yeast... The more sugar that's in the wort, the more the yeast can digest, which means it's more attenuated.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So I know a lot of Belgian styles are like that. I haven't started studying those in depth yet. That's one of my next things. But they're more highly carbonated too, and usually higher in alcohol. So I mean, they'd have to have more sugar in the wort in order for the yeast to turn it into something that's like 9% and has like really higher volume of carbon dioxide in it as well.
Right.
So, but yes. Predominantly, it's the lactobacillus that's added to it. It's easier to brew that way. I know, like, Blue Owl, I think that's how they make their sours. They just make sours in general. That's all they make. But it's very easy to cross-contaminate any of that right. bacteria.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, a lot of, like, bigger breweries, if they make, you know, like, kind of like regular beer styles, and then they have, like, sours, they'll have an entirely different facility or an entirely, like, blocked-off facility for
right.
their sours. And, like, you'll have to wear, like, a pretty much, like, a hazmat suit.
Right,
whenever you're in there. Like a clean suit. Yeah, and then whenever you're, like, going back out to the brewery, you have to, like, change. Because, I mean, if you just touch anything, mm-hmm. you could ruin so many barrels of beer. And that if it's a big facility, like, that could be so detrimental, like...
Absolutely.
Tens of thousands, if not, like, depending on the size, possibly even more than that, millions of dollars worth of damage that you just did. Mm-hmm. And you're probably going to get super fired. So.
Super fired, maybe sued.
Yeah.
Depends on how negligent you are in the process of doing this.
Yes, exactly.
But I think lactobacillus is the same stuff that makes milk turn sour. Mm-hmm. I think it's the same bacteria.
Yeah, they use it in yogurts and... stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
To get that kind of, I don't know, that like tartness. Mm-hmm. But I know there are other bacterias that have been used. Not as familiar with those. I know that there's even like a what they call a wild yeast strain, Brettanomyces, mm-hmm. That kind of gives it that what they call funk. Kind of, I've heard it be called, referred to as like barnyard smell or like a horse blanket, which once you smell it and like you know that smell like of the barnyard or like a horse blanket, and then you try that and you're like, oh, that makes complete sense. It's just, it is this kind of like earthy funk, really. But
that does not sound pleasant.
It doesn't sound pleasant, but like it's
sounds awful.
Delicious. Like Jester King makes a lot of what they call farmhouse ales, which are wild fermentation styles, and oh, they're so, so good.
So is lactobacillus, is that from dairy? Because I know that there are a lot of beers that are not vegan, and they're not just necessarily cream ales and stuff like that.
Right. I've never thought of it that way.
A lot of random beers don't have...
Sours.
A lot of random beers have just, like, lactose in it for that kind of body.
Mm-hmm.
This portion of the episode is just for Derek.
else. Pretty much. I have no idea.
You can drink beer anymore, but for other vegans who might be interested.
Depending on what kind of vegan you are, like, a lot of vegans won't eat any kind of yeast, too, because it is yeast is an animal.
But it doesn't, it's not like it has a brainstem. Like, it doesn't...
I understand that. All I'm saying is yeast is an animal, and so depending on how strictly you are being vegan, there are some vegans that will not eat... They won't eat honey because it exploits bees.
Mm-hmm. Beekeeping saved the bees.
Yeah. And, like, to a certain degree, like, beekeepers are actively keeping bee populations alive. Like, they are not... I don't know. I don't feel like it's an exploit. Because the other thing that, at least, because I've always had, even when I was a vegan, I ate honey because, like, bees are like cats. Bees, if they don't like where they are, they will leave. Like, and there's no stopping them. So, like, they are choosing to stay in the hive in a way that, like, other animal, like, cows are not choosing to stay in that yard, right? Like, they keep them in, right?
Right.
But bees, you can't stop them. If they did not like their house, they're gonna leave.
They can just fly away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They'll just buzz off.
So, at least when I was vegan, I was like, bees kind of consent to being there in that house, and then honey is the rent. That's how I viewed it.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. And people feel differently about it.
A lot of the veganism stuff doesn't really make sense to me anyway, because they want to get away from human suffering, but then they, like, buy shit at Walmart.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of vegans I know honestly don't like people. They just kind of don't like people.
I mean, I guess that's fine.
They much prefer animals, which is fair. Sure. But
it's not exactly cruelty free.
Nothing is gonna be cruelty free.
Yeah, there's very few things that I would say
unless
is cruelty
free. You grow all of your own shit and only eat that.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Ryan wants to be a farmer, because that's way more ethical than buying anything in a supermarket. Right.
Yeah, that's why I buy my eggs from the Filipino lady.
When I went vegan in high school, my friend's grandma was very concerned because she was friends with my grandma. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, is Dylan getting enough protein? And, like, my grandma would make me black bean soup. And that was how she ensured I got protein. And then this lady was like, look at all my chickens. They're free range. Look how happy they are. You can eat these eggs. And I'm like, okay, I'll eat these eggs from your free range chickens that are just roaming the forests of Tennessee.
That seems fair. They're having a great time.
They're having a great time.
They're enjoying it.
They're eating bugs and shit. This is...
All this to say, I was never actually vegan.
Not properly, but...
Not properly vegan. But I tried.
I think that's important.
Yeah. I don't know where we were in
this conversation. We're talking about sorrows and lactic acid.
Did we figure out where lactose bacteria comes from?
Yeah, it is. It comes from dairy. Yeah.
All right.
This is not a cruelty free beer.
I guess not.
But if I drink enough of it, I'll forget.
But yeah, literally no fermented beverage at that point would be vegan because almost all of them use yeast. Mm-hmm. If you are that strict of a vegan,
like an animal that like.
What about kombucha? Can you not have kombucha?
Technically, but then you can't eat anything because plants are technically alive at some point.
Yeah.
Like, what attenuation is?
Mm-hmm.
How, because, like, attenuation seems to have to do about how alcoholic things get, right?
Not necessarily. It doesn't really have anything to do with the ABV. Trying to see if I can find, like, a better definition.
And then ABV is alcohol by volume.
Correct.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
You're good. I know what that means, but some listeners probably won't.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Let's see. Attenuation reflects the amount of reduction in wort concentration resulting from fermentation. So it's, I mean, I guess it could make the gravity, which it does affect the ABV. I'm trying to figure out how that would work. I don't know. I'd have to look into that a little bit more. Like, the more sugar has to be converted into alcohol kind of thing.
Okay.
So, like, the more attenuated a beer is, like I said, the drier it's going to be, the more carbonated it's going to be.
We were talking about attenuation. I feel like I did not go in the order that these were.
Sorry, that's probably my fault. I've been jumping everywhere.
Okay. Let's talk about carbonation. So, obviously, the carbonation in beer comes from
the yeast and the fermentation process, right? Apparently in some commercial brewing, they like take the natural carbonation out and then put it back in. And why would you do that? That seems like such a waste.
Yeah, so it's called forced carbonation. I know a lot of like big beer breweries will do this on occasion, some home brewers, but it's really, if you're doing it as a home brewer, it's usually because you just are impatient.
Okay.
but as like a bigger beer brewery, like if you're doing like Coors or Anheuser-Busch stuff or like Miller or whatever, they're going to force carbonate their beers because once it's carbonated, they can package it and ship it. It's just a quicker turnaround kind of thing. You don't have to wait for it to ferment to the point where it's creating its own carbon dioxide and hits the levels that you're wanting. You can just, you know, it's just faster.
So really all the way around, it comes down to impatience.
Yeah.
Like you could wait, or you could just put a bunch of CO2 in there and call it good.
Exactly. Yeah. Once you like, because I know if you're like a home brewer, you've got like a little 5-gallon keg. You can apply your CO2 cylinder to it at about 20 PSI for about 24 hours, and then it'll probably be ready by the next day.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Whereas if you were fermenting it and allowing it to carbonate as it should, it's probably going to take, depending on the style, it could take several weeks.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Just down to impatience, really.
Okay, fair enough. That makes sense. And would you say it's mostly like these cheaper brands that do this, or is it any commercial?
Typically it is, but I mean, you kind of do it. Anyone can really do it if they need to like turn out a product, if they need like a quicker turnaround on stuff, if they're pushing, I don't know, several different styles, like if they just need to crank them out, then they can do it that way.
Does the forced carbonation have a big effect on the flavor?
No. It just...
So then it doesn't really, like... It doesn't... Nobody can tell based on drinking the beer whether or not it's been forced carbonated?
Mm-mm. No, because it's
just gonna... So why doesn't everybody do it?
Cheaper. Because you have to have that CO2. You'd be buying a lot of carbon dioxide cylinders to have it, like, be dissolved into your beer. And so you'd be going through a lot of it. And right now, I know there's a... Or there was, I haven't checked up on it lately. There was a carbon dioxide like shortage, like a CO2 shortage. Like they didn't have like all the cylinders or something. I can't remember what the whole deal was, but there were some breweries that are like, we can't force carbonate our product. We can't get a quicker turnaround. We're not making any profits because we don't have any CO2.
So it might be better just in the long term to do it just the natural way?
Possibly. I mean, again, it just depends
save on cost, not necessarily on time, but.
Mm-hmm. If you plan it and time it out right, yeah, it'd probably be fine. Like if you've got like a bigger system and you're making like a huge batch at a time, you could probably make that work.
Okay, just wondering.
Mm-hmm.
Those are good questions. I would not have thought of that.
All right, so what is like the upper threshold of like alcohol in a beer? Because like obviously alcohol will kill off the yeast.
Right. It will, yeah. Yeah, so, if the alcohol content gets too high, then it'll just kill the yeast. I actually looked it up last night because I was like, I don't know what the highest ABV beer is. And I know that I've had one that was like in the neighborhood of like 20-something percent alcohol by volume.
Mm.
And that was the Sam Adams Utopias beer. And that was delicious, like that. It was awesome.
But that bottle is like hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, it is a very...
Hundreds?
Hundreds of dollars. It is, they only sell... They only make a certain amount and they only sell a certain amount. And you have to be like high up on a waiting list to get it.
Oh yeah. My God.
It's, like it's kind of like a Pappy Van Winkle of beer. Pappy Van Winkle is this very rare whiskey. It's not necessarily an excellent whiskey, but it's so... like it's a good whiskey.
Okay.
Solid whiskey. But they only make so much of it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's very rare. It's very sought after. And, there's a story about a bar in New York one time that finally got Pappy Van Winkle.
Okay.
And they were so annoyed with how long it took them to get it that the guy decided to make Jell-O shots from it. And then he was, they never gave him Pappy again. Or they gave him less the next year. And he was like, I'm still doing Jello shots. Fuck you guys.
Yeah.
Because I don't, he's like, he just didn't buy into the whole, like, prestige of it.
Yeah.
Well, because it's rare. Yeah.
At that point, it's kind of like a forced shortage. It's the same crap with diamonds, right? Like, they artificially make it rare,
right,
and then charge more for it and be like, right, "Ooh, look, it's rare." It's like diamonds are so common, but, like, I mean, and you could make more of this. You are choosing not to.
There is like a big difference with Pappy, because you do have to, like, I think their lowest, like their youngest, I guess, that they sell is eight years aged.
Okay, so they do actually, like, age it and let it sit for a long time. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. That's so at least, like, actual...
There's a little bit of reasoning behind it. Could they make more? Sure. But they don't want to, because they want to have, like, micro control over each individual batch.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, it is a little pretentious, though.
It is
a little pretentious. 100%. I understand they probably love whiskey, but I'm like, come on now.
I mean, there are better whiskeys that are less expensive, to be honest.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll see.
Just like that Utopia.
Utopia is just good.
Griffin. Mm-hmm. Did he ever let us try that?
I got to try it.
Oh. How come I didn't get to try it?
I don't know. Were you there at the dinner? We had, like, a big... prime rib dinner, and it was paired with that Sam Adams Utopias.
No, I guess not.
And it was,
but, like, for amazing. It was like a 2 ounce pour, right?
Yeah, you only got like,
so it's like,
because he only got like
a shot glass worth.
I think
basically.
He only got one bottle.
Yeah.
The bottle's beautiful. Like,
it's a gold bottle.
It's got like a little window thing in it that slides open. You can see, like,
you can see the beer,
the
inside.
Liquid in there. It's pretty. It's pretty.
That's pretty fancy.
But he sold it like. If you buy that for a 2 ounce pour, it's like $80,
something like that. Well, that was, I think, included with the dinner or something.
Right.
But
in general, if you bought it from somewhere else,
yeah, it'd be ungodly. It's been expensive like that. Yeah, it was dumb. But I was looking up, what was it, highest ABV beer? So there's one from a brewery in Scotland, Brewmeister Brewery in Scotland, and it's called Snake Venom. Guess what the ABV is? I think this was 40. Absurd. Yeah,
I'm gonna go higher. I'm gonna go 45.
67.5%.
Jesus Christ. That is like Everclear.
That is liquor. Like,
yeah, that's just most, a liquor at that
most
point.
Vodkas are like 40%, and this is 67.5%. It is insane.
Does it taste good?
I have no idea, but it's scary. I don't know if
it's
I want to try
like
it.
Rubbing alcohol
because
with like a twig in it.
I'd have to research like how they got. An ABV that high.
They just put scotch in it.
Maybe. I was reading that there's like a bunch of people that are like fighting over the highest ABV beer, and I think it was like between Scotland and Germany. Like, they just kept going back and forth. And I was like, that sounds about right. I didn't like super read up on it, but I was just like,
I like that cold. Cold War version. That's a lot more fun.
The Cold War beer.
Yeah.
We have the most alcoholic beer. Yeah. It's us.
Yeah. No, that sounds terrifying. I don't know how they. I'd have to research and figure out how
to
get the ABV
right, like, there.
So high. That's insane.
We should see if we can get a bottle of that to try it, and we'll add it on to the end.
That'd be insane.
And then if we can get our hands on it,
yeah. For 3 hours.
Because I know there's a way, like, there's a style of lager. It's called an Eisbock, and what you do is you actually like freeze it, so that you can like pull the water out and then just ferment that. So that's how they get like a higher ABV on that. That's illegal in America, by the way. Don't do that. Here in the U.S. You don't get in trouble.
Like, it's illegal, period, the end, or, like, illegal to sell it?
Probably illegal to sell it. I would...
Because, like, technically it's illegal to sell your own liquor, but it's not illegal to make your own liquor, you know?
Yeah.
This is not a law podcast, so whatever we say is legal or not legal.
We need a lawyer.
We're gonna ask a guy that has a degree in the law, but, yeah.
Chris Espino. What's up?
I don't know any lawyers.
I just know Chris Espino.
And Bonnie.
Who's
Vader.
This Chris?
Yeah.
And Bonnie. Bonnie's like a divorce lawyer, though.
She's still a badass. She knows some things.
Chris Espino is, like, if you ever get a ticket for anything, really, call Chris Espino. They call him Dismiss Chris because he almost always gets your charges dismissed.
That's a good nickname. He dismissed Chris. That's good.
He is an American
better than
hero.
Like the strong arm or the tank or the gorilla.
There's a dude on TikTok called, I know his name's Ken. I don't know anything else about him, but he looks like the guy from Better Call Saul, but like real life. He wears like all these gold rings, and he like just makes like lawyer TikToks where he's like, "Don't lie to your lawyer."
Yeah,
it's basically don't lie to your lawyer.
Don't lie to the lawyer.
Also, like, if you tell your lawyer that you are guilty, they will not let you testify because they can't let you lie on the stand.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of loopholes in there.
But yeah, it's just like these really weirdly sketchy but also informative videos. And like I said, like all gold rings.
He doesn't teach you how to break the law, but he does teach you how to skirt around it.
He teaches you how to be found out guilty.
Nice.
That's important information.
Yeah, right, but so. Like literally looks like Better Call Saul, but real life. It's great. Yeah. What's the mashing? What is? I feel like that we should just like cut this part out, put it back in the front, because I feel
yeah, that's kind of like toward the beginning.
No, like what mashing is? Like I feel like I should have asked that at the beginning and I forgot.
Okay.
But we'll see. Or we could just put it in here and people listening can be like,
I mean,
like,
I don't
fine.
Think it makes it any less, like, I don't think it makes it more confusing to leave it here.
Okay, cool. Yeah. If it makes sense, it's fine. And then why is boiling done in copper? That's probably an easier question to ask first.
Yeah, well, it was done in copper because it was just easily accessible, and you really can't have anything with iron in it because it's going to ruin your mash. Like, it's going to...
Because of the rust?
Yeah, the ferrous metals, they're too porous, and it's just going to... It'll react with whatever you put in it, and it'll create off flavors. So copper was easier to use and more accessible, and it conducted heat more evenly, which is predominantly why it was used. There's a lot of stainless steel used now, but there are some breweries that still use copper.
Copper is like the traditional way, like if you're trying to be really traditional about
yeah.
it, right?
Yeah, like even in like distilleries, they still have like copper stills that they'll use to distill all their stuff. Mashing is just like the water and the crushed malt. That's your mash.
So that's like the first step to making an extract, right? So,
yep.
So you like mash it up, and then like do you like just filter it off and then add the yeast? Is that how it works?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It seems pretty simple.
All your other additives and stuff.
All right, and the last question I have is, how do you get a buttery beer, and why is that awful? Because it's
oh,
it sounds awful. I feel like, yeah.
Yes. It is definitely considered like an off flavor. It's diacetyl is what it is. It kind of gives it like a movie theater popcorn aroma and flavor. It even can give it almost like an oily mouthfeel. It's not really, it's not pleasant. There are some styles that have just a little bit of diacetyl in it.
So it's not like butterbeer from Harry Potter.
It's usually a byproduct of bacteria that's introduced into your wort. It's going to happen, but while you're fermenting, the yeast will basically like digest it and kind of like get rid of it. So if you don't ferment long enough, you're going to get something that's kind of buttery like that. You can. It's controlled during the boil, so you've got to monitor your temperature really closely and your time to make sure that you are giving it enough time to get the yeast to work and get rid of it. I know it is a desirable flavor in like Chardonnay. So you'll see like there's diacetyl and Chardonnays, but I can't remember which style it is. It's going to bother me now. But there is a particular beer style where it is desirable to, but on like a very, very
like just minimal, enough probably to get the smell and a little hint of the flavor.
Yeah, so just
like
a little bit.
The Blanche de Brussels that I like so much that tastes like butter toast and orange juice.
That one is delicious.
Do you think there's that in there?
I don't know if they have it in wit beers. They might. To some extent.
I describe every beer as tasting like a breakfast food.
Everything is toast. Different levels of
toast. It tastes like toast or it tastes like some kind of cereal.
Beer is literally liquid bread.
It is. Yeah. I mean,
so that's going to taste like Fruity Pebbles. There might be rice in here.
Yeah.
My German professor told us a story. I don't know if it's true or not, because my German teacher was literally like an American military guy who went to Germany. And so, like, all the German he taught us was, like, ordered dry beer because the waitress is never coming back. That's literally, like, all I learned in that class. That's hilarious. He told us to go to the bathroom, like, when we had to ask to use the restroom, because, like, high school, you have to ask. Mm-hmm. he said, we had to say, ich muss ein großer Puppe machen.
Have to take a big shit? Is that what that means?
No, it means I have to make a giant puppet.
Okay.
I like that better than drop the kids off at the pool.
That's funny. Make a giant puppet.
Yeah, but if I said "Ich muss ein großer Puppe machen" to a German, they'd be like, "I'm sorry, what?"
They don't know what that means.
They would know what it means, but like, okay,
they don't understand the euphemism.
I want to. Okay, yeah, but like, if someone from another country came up to me and told me I need to make a giant puppet, I'd be like, "That's cool, man."
I have no craft supplies for you.
Yeah, I don't even know where you'd find puppet supplies. You know, like, it's not going to get you what you need.
True, true.
If you actually have to use a restroom, you ask where, wo ist das WC? I think that's how you say it. Where is the water closet? Yeah,
the WC.
Mm-hmm. WC. I said it wrong.
Yeah, that thing.
But yeah. That's what I learned. Anyway, he told me that German monks used to drink nothing but beer when they were fasting.
Yeah.
Is that true? Do you know that's true?
That is actually true, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's probably the most factual thing I learned in that class.
So they created the style called a Doppelbock, which is just a double Bock. Like, it's higher in alcohol content than a regular Bock, but that's not double. That's
gonna be fun, though, because if you're not eating, that means you get drunk so fast.
I know, that sounds great. I love a Doppelbock. It's so good. But yeah, it's the first one that was made was called Salvatore, which is salvation. It's like,
oh, okay. The
saviors, yes, it was liquid bread, was what it was. I would love to hang out with those monks, because I bet they had a great time. Mm-hmm. But there are still monasteries that brew beer to make money for their monasteries, and like they sell the excess. And I know that there's at least one, technically, I guess, in America. I think it's up in New York, and I can't think of what it starts with an S. Oh, my brother's gonna kill me because I can't remember what it is. He's probably screaming it right now. I'm sorry.
Who's he?
Okay, so my brother is also a bartender and a big beer geek, too, so we talk about this all the time. And his former roommate is a certified Cicerone, so I've got, like, a big
So they're all going to listen to this geeks. And be like, it's called this! It's they called are, this!
I want to say Spencer, but I don't know if that's right.
Well, you know, you live and are married to the producer of this podcast, yeah. So you can just, like, say edit this in.
Yeah, just say a bunch of words and
I want to say it's like Spencer Brewing. It's like Trappist/Monastery is what the style is called. But yeah,
okay.
Monks make some really good beer.
I bet. Especially mm-hmm. German monks. Yeah. I feel like, so I am German on one half of my ancestry, or like a quarter.
Germans,
I
guess
a
quarter. They think they're the captain of beer.
They are the captain of beer, and I feel like they're very disappointed in me because because
you don't like it?
Because I don't like it. And then also I'm a chemist, right? And like chemistry, as we've learned on this show so far, right?
It's for beer.
It's for beer, but also like Germans are the forerunners of chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
So at least I got like that half, right? Like I at least became a chemist because like all those German ancestors were like, yeah, chemistry.
All right.
Oh, but they don't like beer.
Ah, dang.
Gotta throw away.
Germans aren't really known for vodka or whiskey or scotch or gin or anything. It's just
yeah. I don't think they got a. I don't beer. Think I know a liquor that's a German liquor.
Not really a spirit that I can think of. No, because they. Well, I don't know.
You're a traitor to your people. That's cool. I don't know.
I mean, they were Nazis, so
they deserve to be traded against.
They're traitors. Yeah. You can be traitors.
Okay, that's fair.
I don't know. At least my ancestors were Nazis. I'm not saying all German ancestors were Nazis, obviously. But mine sure were.
Oh, yikes.
Well, now that you're going to get canceled, that's a good way to close out the show.
Hey, how am I going to get canceled?
I don't know. The sins of your fathers or something.
I'm saying they're bad people. I'm not defending them.
We should do the women's in the brew house, I think, as a bonus episode.
Sure. But yeah, we can give a little spoiler here of So, like, you know, we talked about this a bit yesterday. Like, brewing used to be a woman's art, right? Or a woman's mm-hmm. responsibility, or how?
Yes.
How would you phrase that?
It was. So, brewing was a household chore. While the men were actually, like, working in the fields or traveling, doing whatever they needed to do, go hunt or something, women were at home and were able to brew beer. And it was actually more beneficial to drink beer than it was water, because back then the water was just so unsanitary.
Right. That
actually boiling it and adding all these other grains and stuff to it, there's actually a little bit of nutrient value in it as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was started with women at home making beer for their families, and then if they had excess, then they would go sell it, you know, in town or whatever. And once men found out that women were able to make money off of it, they're like, oh, right. Wait.
Then they took it away.
Yeah, and they're like, no. If we're industrializing this, it's going to be my job, and that's mm-hmm. where we are today. So...
We could definitely do a bonus episode, talk about that, because brewing is very much a masculine thing now. Like,
yeah, you bro down with some brewskis. I mean,
it's just like STEM. STEM is a very masculine mm-hmm. thing, and yeah. And even radio chem, which I think is really interesting, like radio chem that I am a part of, it started off as a woman's thing, because like you have like Marie Curie and Liza Meitner.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they got this radio chem job is because men were like, oh, it's so stupid. Like, this, nothing's going to come of this. And then it ended up being a big thing, right? And yeah. I feel like brewing's the same, that same idea comes down to
for
it,
sure.
right?
For sure.
So, yeah, because I never would have thought about it. Yeah, it's absolutely like a household. Would have been a household responsibility. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but we'll talk about it more. Cool. Thank you to Kelsey Stives for being here. And do you have any, do you want to plug social media or anything?
Let's see. You can follow me on Instagram. I have random pictures and stuff of beer. I was doing like a little shower beer thing there for a bit. I may bring that back. So
shower beer. Oh, yeah.
Shower beers are
your
a thing.
Shower beer. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, it's Kel_Snipes. Yeah, check that out. Or you can come see me at work, where I have 20 taps of craft beer to choose from, and I will talk to you ad nauseum and geek out with you about beer.
Where's
Flipper's
your work?
Tavern. Flipper's Tavern downtown. It's on the corner of 14th and Avenue Q. Oh. So come check that out. Flipper's_Tavern.
It's where I met you.
Yeah. It's a cool spot.
It's a great spot. It's a pinball bar.
Yes.
Gourmet
hot dogs.
Around the corner from my house, and so I go there like at least once a week because mm-hmm. it's delicious. Get the tie-dye dog. All right. Awesome. Follow Cowboy Chemistry at Cowboy Chem or Cowboy Chemistry or Cowboy Chemistry Pod on the various social medias. I don't know which one is which, but follow us there. And we're going to be opening a Patreon, so follow the Patreon. That's where all our bonus content will be. The first bonus content is about Flubber. So if you want to hear us absolutely ruin your childhood as we talk about Flubber, that's what that one is for. And then the second one will be me and Kelsey talking more about how brewing is women's work and should be women dominated again.
Yes. Down with the patriarchy.
Down with the patriarchy. All right. Thank you. Outro music goes here. Woo!
Apoptosis going mad, my liver's gonna fail. Maybe it's from the radium I use to paint my nails. Well, say you hate me, carbon date me, throw me in the sea. I'll be back with time because I'm made of stardust and chemistry. Of stardust and chemistry. Mm-hmm.